Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Dad! 8-year-old Katie's voice was shaking so much between sobs that it was hard to pick out her words. Could you please come and get me and bring me home? What's the matter, kitten? Her dad replied, trying to be as calm as he could at 7 a.m. on a Sunday morning. Are you hurt?
No, Dad, she just barely squeaked out. It's just that it's so terrible here. I just want to come home, that's all.
What about your friend Margie? Her dad inquired. Is she unhappy too?
No, mean old Margie just left me out. She has lots of friends now.
Katie paused for a few sniffles.
Oh, why did you and Mom make me come here? It's so awful. Just get me out, okay?
As I recall, her dad responded quietly, going to this camp was your choice. It would be pretty good if you could stick it out for at least the rest of this week. Want to call back on Wednesday and let us know how it's going? Lots of weeping on the other end, and then a pause.
Okay, Katie responded, but I'm coming home Wednesday.
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about overnight camps for our kids? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is in the best position to help us sort out all the camp information and ideas to plan good summer experiences for our children. Carrie Rivers is the co-owner of Tips on Trips and Camps, a consulting service on overnight summer programs for ages 8 to 18. She has been advising parents on summer programs for children for 15 years. Carrie is the mother of 2 grown children, a son and a daughter. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Carrie.
Well, thank you for having me today.
What do you consider the biggest issue parents and kids face regarding overnight camp?
Well, I think the issue is different for parents and for kids. I think for parents, it seems like an overwhelming task to find out about the summer programs and then to decide which one is a good match for their child. For the child, I think one of the biggest issues is trying to mesh their goals with their parents' goals, because often they can be quite different. And I do find that the kids are very sharp about what is going to work for them.
Is there a certain stage or age that's really best to get started with this? Our opening story, of course, I'm sure threw fear into the hearts of many parents.
You know, I actually think parents often have this vision of rescuing their child at summer camp, that they're going to send their child off to this place that's not going to be a happy place like home, and that they're going to have to rush in and save them from this experience. But I think, in fact, camp is such a really happy, healthy, fun place. Children adjust better to camp when they start at a younger age rather than an older age. There are usually less issues. They're more used to being in a nurturing environment, and that's what camp is. Typically for a sleepaway camp, they have children as young as 6 or 7. More often, that's a sibling. 8 or 9 is a great age to go. If you wait until a child is 11, 12, 13, it's a little harder on the adjustment time, and it's also more difficult in terms of moving into a camp socially because the camp culture can be set by that age.
We had an experience sort of like the story that started off the show. One of my children, my youngest, was away at camp for the third year at the same camp. We started getting postcards. Please come and get me. I'm very sad. Please come and get me. Everything is bad here, whatever. And not much on the postcards. So we called the camp. And they said, well, do you want to talk to the counselor? Yes, we'd like to talk to the counselor. The counselor said, well, you sure? He said he's out there flying one of these balsa wood airplanes with a bunch of friends. Do you want me to call him to the phone? I said, no, I'm sure that would make him more homesick. So he said, I really think he's doing fine. And the postcards continued. And he was there, I think, for 3 weeks. And the postcards continued. And we continued to call and get reports from the director and the director's wife and the counselor. The child was doing beautifully. So we picked him up at the bus when he got back from camp. And he's carrying things he made and things he won and all kinds of papers and things. And I said, oh, I'm so glad to see you. Yes, he was happy to be home. We had a snack. Hours are going by and he's still not saying a word and I'm not going to ask. Finally, after a few hours, I said, you know, we got those postcards from you that said you weren't having a very good time. He said, oh, those. Well, when I went to sleep at night, I missed you. So I wrote you postcards. Oh.
That's wonderful. And that really points out the heart of homesickness, because homesickness, mm-hmm. I mean, in the story about Katie, she was calling at 7 o'clock in the morning and late at night. There are times of the day when the kids are homesick, and it's usually during downtime early in the morning. They're happy as clams when they're out in activities. And so one of the camps that I represent has a homesick club that meets at 6:30 a.m. every morning,
cute.
Because that's when kids, you know, have a little bit of downtime. So if your child does want to come home, really you need to talk with them during a time when they're not feeling blue, which is more during the day, during the activity period. Part of the camp experience is overcoming fears. And one of the fears is being away from home and being separated from what is familiar. And I think that it's a huge accomplishment to get through that. And the director at your child's camp was really sharp, because he was watching the whole picture. And a director sees so much, you know, homesickness and knows, you know, when it's normal, which it happens to almost every child that goes to camp, and when it's really out of the ordinary. And you really should trust the director to give you a clue in terms of whether you should come in and pick up your child.
Of course, we had the advantage that this was the third summer he
right.
had gone to this camp, and
so
we knew he had
done
beautifully.
You knew you hadn't done anything terrible to him to send him to this wonderful camp.
How can you evaluate if your own child is ready to try this experience? My child, say, is 9 years old,
right.
wants to go away to sleepaway camp because other friends are going to such places. How can we determine if we should go ahead?
Well, I think the first thing you should do is get the parent ready for the child to go away, because often it is the parent and not the child that has the fears and anxieties and worries about the child being gone. So that if you can, in your own mind, investigate summer camps a little bit and get an idea of what's really valuable about a summer camp and what your child's going to get out of it, I think that helps you to work with your child. I think if your child is able to spend the night out with a friend, go over to relatives and spend the night out without you, then that's an indication that they'll do fine at camp. If you have a child who you have to go get from sleepovers every Saturday night, that child may not be ready for camp. The other thing that really helps in getting a child ready for camp is the process of choosing a camp. And it's a great opportunity for involving your child and working with your child to get good decision-making skills instilled, because really the process, the kids may look at it from a different perspective. I once had a young girl come in, she was about 9 or 10, and she came into a camp fair, and she said, I'm going to go around and ask these directors questions. And so I said, okay, great, what are you going to ask them? And she said, I want to know what their candy policy is. And I thought, oh, isn't that great? She likes candy and like me, and she was going to find out. And she said, oh, no, I just want to find out if they're mean or nice. And she said, I can tell by the way they talk about the candy policy. So that's what she did, and she went around.
Isn't that clever?
Yeah, it was smart. And she came back, and she said, well, he's really, really nice, but he wasn't very nice, you know, and she wasn't wrong. So I think the parents can really trust their child to have good instincts, and they should listen to their child and involve them in the decision. So I think, you know, meeting with directors, talking with other children who've gone to camp, going to camp fairs are all good ways to really get the child ready, because you're doing it at, you know, 6 to 9 months before the child's going to go to camp. And a child at 8 or 9 has a lot of growth in that time period. So you don't know for sure, but if all the signs point that way, you should definitely encourage the child to go, because it's such a beneficial experience.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on overnight camps.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with Carrie Rivers about sleepaway camp for kids. Is it significant whether or not they have a friend who's going to XYZ camp?
I get asked that question all the time. If your child can go to camp without a friend, it will be a better experience for a number of reasons. Because, first of all, if the friend goes and gets homesick, then that's going to cause your child problems. Your child may feel responsibility for the well-being of her friend, and that can cause problems. But on the other hand, if your child is not able to go without a friend, then you should not give up the camp experience because they need to go with a friend. I mean, even as adults, a lot of times it's more fun to go, you know, with somebody than to do it on your own. But part of the camp experience is learning to enter new situations and make new friends. And that's the benefit of going without a friend.
One of the programs my kids all went on at different times mm-hmm. in the summer advised that you not be with a friend. And mm-hmm. if you applied with a friend, they would put you in two different groups.
Right.
And I thought that was very wise.
Yeah. But, I mean, the camps you know. And the programs certainly prefer that the children come without, and they will not let them go in lockstep, because then that is the nucleus of a clique within a group, and that mm-hmm. immediately alters the dynamic in the cabin and every place else. So they definitely discourage it, but it's not uncommon to go with a friend. It makes the decision much more difficult, because it's rare that two families are going to have the same goals, the same budgets, the same dates. So more often than not, when a family calls me and says, I've got three or four friends that want to go, I know in reality that one or two will go at most. And there are some programs that will not allow it in small groups. If there's like a teen travel program where they're 12 or 14 kids, to have two people together is not good. And they don't allow individual relationships, either girl-girl, boy-boy, or boy-girl, because it affects the social dynamic of the camp.
When we're talking about overnight camps, most parents can't afford to go visit the overnight camp 500 miles away right. or something. So how do they really know what goes on when it's so far away?
Well, I think the most important thing about a camp is the people that populate it, from the director who sets the tone and the whole atmosphere of the camp and hires the staff and the caliber of the staff, so that if you can make an effort to get to know the director, either by telephone, or many directors are on the road all winter long meeting families. So if you have an opportunity, certainly leap to take advantage of that, because that will tell you more than anything else about the camp. You can look on a website, on a video, and get a sense of the facilities. And the facilities, as long as they're adequate for the activities, are not really as important as the people. The other way to check it out without visiting is to check references. Call other families who have had children at the camp that you're considering. If you talk with them, that gives you a really good idea about the camp. Any Some camp should absolutely give you good references. And if they're not willing to, then you would really have to think twice about sending your child to that camp. That would be a red flag that they've got something to hide.
You ask them, I'd like to talk to some other families.
Absolutely.
Is there an advantage to sending a young child to a 1 week or 2 week overnight program before you actually send them away to 3 or 4 weeks of camp or longer?
I feel very strongly that 4 or 3 weeks is significantly better than 1 or 2 weeks. If your child cannot, in your mind, go for longer than 1 week, then you should really wait and not send them for such a short period of time. Because what happens is the child arrives on Sunday, on Monday and Tuesday figures out where everything is, on Wednesday and Thursday starts enjoying the activities and perhaps making a friend, and on Friday they start thinking about going home on Saturday. So you've had very, very little time to get any benefit out of camp. And it really takes until about the 3rd week of camp, if not the 4th week of camp, for the processes of getting through the homesickness, getting familiar, beginning to feel like you belong, making a friend, developing some skills. And that's really, you know, the benefit that the child should take away from camp. And it doesn't happen in a week. You can't put on a good play in a week. So I definitely feel that the longer the better in terms of really helping your child to become part of another community.
Well, we've danced around this a little bit, but do you have pointers for parents who are choosing an overnight camp for their child?
Well, the first thing would be to meet the director in person, if at all possible. And there are a lot of questions that you should ask the director. You should find out about their background and experience. You should find out about his or her staff and how he hires the staff, what their ages are. Typically, camp counselors should be 18, or 80 or 90% of the camp counselors should be older than 18, and there should be some adults among the camp counselors. So I would definitely inquire about the staff.
The ratio of camper to staff?
That's
as well.
Important. Most camps have a really good solid ratio. 1 to 4 is typical. What is required by the American Camping Association is 1 to 6 for the very youngest campers and 1 to 8 for older. And most camps far exceed that. So I think that's really not a big issue.
If these are guidelines, does it mean that the camp should be accredited by the American Camping Association, or not necessarily?
1 in 5 camps are accredited by the American Camping Association. So It is a self-evaluation process. It is voluntary. Other camps undergo accreditation by either regional organizations or by the state licensing agencies, so that most camps that are operating, or all camps that are operating, have some type of inspection. Some of it is minor in terms of health and safety issues, but a non-accredited camp is not necessarily a bad camp. I mean, what's important about camp are the intangibles, much more so than the number of tennis courts they have and things like that.
What are some of the other questions parents should be asking?
I think they should take a look at the schedule that a camp has in terms of how their child would function. If it's got 5 activity periods and each one has to be assigned, or do the children get to choose activities? And you know, your child may be one that is very independent and has a really good idea about what they want to do. And so that would make a big difference in the success of the camp. I think another really important thing is to talk to the director about what the communication system is. Parents are often surprised to learn that most camps don't let parents call in or children call out, certainly within the first 10 days or 2 weeks of camp. So those are a couple of things. I think that you also need to talk with a director if your child has special needs, because you need to find out if the camp can accommodate those needs. And so you need to find out what their dietary possibilities are, for example, if you have a child with food allergies and things like that.
Is it important, by the way, for them to have some kind of medical person on staff?
I think camps always have a nurse on staff, and they usually have a doctor on call within a very short distance. Not all camps have a doctor on call, and often the nurses are more knowledgeable than the doctors, because in order to get a doctor to camp, it could be, you know, an orthopedic surgeon who may not know a thing about, you know, mosquito bites.
When should we be deciding about camp and overnight experiences for the summer? Should we be looking at those, you know, during the winter and spring months? Should we have decided on that by December? And how do we know that our child is going to have the same degree of readiness in June that we thought he had in February?
Right. Well, the longer the session, the earlier you need to begin, because the full season camps that last 7 or 8 weeks typically do fill up in September, October, certainly by December. Right, because they have the highest return rate, and so most of the kids are going to be going back, so they maybe only need about 10% more children to fill the camp. So if you're considering a 7 or 8 week session, you definitely need to start in the fall. In the winter and the spring, the shorter session camps begin to fill. Certainly earlier is better if you want choices, because as you wait later, you have fewer and fewer choices, and you're less likely to have the perfect match, which is what you're looking for.
I think somebody like you knows who's got a few more openings.
Right, exactly.
So that helps to go to somebody who is a camp counselor, and if you're late,
right,
and say, gee, my son wants this kind of camp. Do you know of any that might still have an opening?
Right.
We did that. We had that experience and had a great find.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of things that a referral service can help you with, and I think the most important one, just to digress a bit, but the most important one is that you need to get a sense of the camp culture and the camp personality, and that is the hardest thing to ascertain from the brochure or the video. And we get that by visiting. We do visit everything that we represent.
How can we be sure that our child who says in February or September that he wants to go to camp is going to have the same feeling by June when it's time to leave?
Well, I think the process of making the decision about the camp really will give you a lot of clues to whether or not your child will be ready. And you can also then take the steps to help your child get ready by having them meet with perhaps some campers that will be going, or meet with the director, or go to a reunion or something like that. You know, the process of talking about it over the spring is helpful. And you talk about it in a positive way, that you're not sending the child away to camp, away from the home. You're sending the child to camp for a great experience. And that attitude, I think, will do more than anything to ensure that your child is ready.
Are there certain characteristics that every single camp or summer program should have?
Well, I think the most important one is that the director have a clear mission and a clear goal for what he's trying to accomplish within the camp community. It's not purely a recreational environment, and the activities are really there for what many of the camp directors call teaching moments, where they can teach life skills. And I think a camp that has that underlying philosophy and can express that in clear ways is the most important thing. I think then you need to have a really high-quality staff. And again, you have to look to the director and what his criteria are for his staff. I think that is really important.
Is it important how many staff members return each year?
I think that is an important factor in a camp. I think it's almost more important than the number of campers that return, because the staff is what makes the camp. And if the staff is back year after year after year, then you've got a tradition and a whole atmosphere of things going on that really just makes for a wonderful environment.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on overnight camps.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parents Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Carrie Rivers about sleepaway camp for kids.
What about a kind of camp, this would probably be for older kids, that specializes in a specific thing, like a music camp or a theater camp or a sports camp or something?
Yeah.
Are there different guidelines parents need to have for those?
Yeah, I definitely tend to recommend that families wait until a child is at least 11 or 12 to send them to a specialty camp. And one of the big trends lately has been that there are more and more specialty camps for younger and younger children. And really, part of the camp experience is to try out new things and develop new passions, and then as they get older, to go into a specialty camp. When you're looking at a specialty camp, that is going to give you a different kind of experience because it's much more skill-oriented. There's not an emphasis on life skills so much at a music camp, for example. You're learning to play an instrument or voice or do musical theater or something like that, so that you're looking at very different things. And then you really have to look even more carefully at the staff, because the staff has to be older, more professional in terms of their background and training in order to impart to your child the skills that you're looking for.
What about that heart-wrenching phone call like Katie's in our opening story? What should we do if that happens?
I think if you get that kind of a call from your child, you should talk with the director and with your child's counselor and really trust them to make a judgment on whether or not your child is really happy at camp or not happy at camp, because you're seeing one tiny little vignette of her camp experience, and it's a full day long, and many of the camp experiences don't even gel, and the memories that they make, you know, are taken with the children after they leave camp. And unfortunately, if you rush in and bring your child home, that's a failure. And I think that's unfortunate, because camp is so geared to success and to happy campers. It's not a difficult environment. It's a fun, challenging, exciting, you know, wonderful feeling environment.
Well, we're coming to the end of this, unfortunately, but are there some resources that you would suggest for parents who are wringing their hands and going, oh no, now what do I do?
Yeah. Well, I think there are definitely two parts to the process. And the first thing is to find out about camps that would possibly be a good match for your child. And the way to do that would be to either go on the web, or there are large numbers of books available that list it. And then you can also go to a referral service or a camp fair. Any of those are good resources to find out the camps that you should then examine. But then the key part comes in after that. After you've found the camps that you want to consider, then you really need to do some good research and call references. And the most important thing in calling a reference is to find out about the child that went to the camp, because that child may not be like your child. And that's really important, because it won't be the same experience for your child. So I think you need to check references. You need to interview directors. I think visiting camps is a nice thing to do, but I don't think it's necessary. You can certainly get a sense of the culture and personality of a camp from a camp consultant. They're usually very knowledgeable about those kinds of intangibles that really make a big difference.
How about giving us some information about tips on trips and camps?
Oh, well, I'd be happy to. We have consultants that have visited our over 400 programs that we represent and can help a family very quickly narrow down their options and send brochures, and then can give parents the questions to ask, things to be concerned about in looking at different types of programs. We have consultants in a number of different cities. If there's one where you are, that's great. If not, we have a website, which is www.tipsontripsandcamps.com.
You want to say that again in case anybody's running for a pencil?
Okay. It's tipsontripsandcamps, spelled
all together.
All together, .com. And you can go on and fill out a registration form, and then there is a search engine with programs listed. The registration form will then go to a consultant who will be in touch with you either by phone or by email and can be quite helpful in quickly helping you narrow down your options.
Is there an 800 number for those not on the web?
Yes, there is. That's 800-519-8477.
You want to say that again?
800-519-8477.
Our special thanks today to Carrie Rivers for sharing with us her expertise on sleepaway camps for kids.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call toll-free 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and tell us what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning in from. Parents as Mentors in Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.